Bob Hale of Booz Allen Hamilton is a former comptroller, undersecretary of defense at the Department of Defense, and here to talk about the budget resolutions. Where do we stand right now? We have a resolution in the House. We have a resolution in the Senate. What's the difference as it pertains particularly to the Department of Defense, Bob? Thanks for being here as always.
Well, my pleasure to be here. First, let me just start out and be sure our listeners understand. These are resolutions or concurrent resolutions. Technically, they're not laws, which means they don't require the president's signature, but they also can't raise the caps. They can't add money. Also, typically pretty partisan documents. That was true when the Democrats were in the Senate, too. And this one's no exception. I don't think there's been any Democratic votes in favor of either one in either House. So they differ a lot in areas outside of defense. I'm not going to focus on that. In defense, they are much more alike than they are different. And the main thing they feature is, I'll call it the OCO fix. They didn't want, I think the Republicans didn't feel they had the votes in their own party to raise the caps, even in a plan like this one. So instead, they've added a substantial amount of money, more than $35 billion, both of them do, to the Overseas Contingency Operations, or OCO fund. That's wartime funding. It's an emergency funding and so exempt from the caps. And so technically, they've left the caps in place, but added enough money so they're up to the president's budget, or in the case of the House, just a little bit above it. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where we are. Both of them are, they're working now to reach a conference agreement, which they'll need to take to each floor.
And you mentioned that these bills on each side are more, resolutions are more alike than they are different. I guess the pragmatist in me wonders how different they are from what the White House has offered or asked for beyond the OCO number. Because that's what really counts, is whatever comes out of Congress, the president has to be willing to sign.
Well, again, I'm focusing on defense.
Sure,
there are some major differences, certainly with the White House, but even, I think, between the bills on Medicare, Medicaid. On defense, I think the main issue would be the OCO. The president has said he won't support legislation that doesn't raise the caps, and I think he has in mind both defense and non-defense. This one doesn't, mm-hmm. and so I assume that if this plan were to find its way into law, he would be opposed. And in general, the administration and Department of Defense has also opposed the OCO fix.
Your predecessor, Dov Zakheim, joined you in the studio a couple of months back. One of the questions I posed to the two of you was, why is it such a bad idea to just put the extra money that the White House wants for defense into the OCO budget? It's kind of a shortcut or an easy way around the top line. Let's revisit that and explain why that's a bad idea, to be fair, in both your view and Dove's view. So Republican and Democrat agreeing, this is not a good way to go about doing this.
Well, I won't speak for Dove's.
Of course not.
Here, but I can say I think it is a bad idea. First, it's a bad precedent. The emergency funding is set up to be just that, to be something you can't anticipate, which at least at the beginning, certainly the wartime funding was that. Once you start ignoring that distinction, just essentially putting money in and calling an emergency so it doesn't count against the caps, who knows where that goes? Another administration, different times. I think it's just a bad precedent. The other thing is it's a one-year fix. OCO is wartime funding. It's only appropriated 1 year at a time, planned 1 year at a time. And so they have to do this whole thing again next year. And the Department of Defense and the rest of government, I believe, but DOD in particular, desperately need some stability. They need to know where they're heading. Mm-hmm. So I think for both those reasons, a bad idea.
It's the word that comes to mind is the word that I've heard many times in this discussion, and that's certainty. There's no certainty if you stash a bunch of the money into something that you know for sure is not guaranteed beyond September 30, 2016.
I think that's right. And we need... We need a mini deal that the president can accept, that they get enough votes to pass both houses of Congress, and that raises, in my view, defense does need some of the added funding that the president has proposed. And so we need a mini deal that raises the caps on defense and probably non-defense as well, and perhaps pays for it by other changes. And I still hope that will happen, but it's probably not going to happen until the fall.
Well, I have a commentary up on federalnewsradio.com right now that goes exactly in that direction. And my sense of the discussions that I hear going on, still very, very, very back room on the Hill, is that that's what we're likely to see, is that the bipartisan budget agreement kind of set future Congresses up that here's a good example to follow, a two-year deal. Not great, but it's a doable example. Right. So set them up in a positive way, but also set them up in a negative way especially considering that Republicans control both chambers, in that, hey, you had a Democratic Senate and a Republican House, and they were able to reach this agreement. So if one party, either party, controls both chambers and you can't get the job done, it's pretty blatant failure. And so the buzz that I continue to hear is that something along those lines
I hope
would
so.
Be
There's
most
actually
likely.
Been two of them since 2011 when the Budget Control Act passed. The American Taxpayer Relief Act in late 2012 was also bipartisan. It got through both houses of Congress.
Yes.
The president signed it, which is what we're looking for here.
Right.
So I still hope. We got a ways to go. There is one good thing. I think the OCO fix in general is a bad idea, and I hope it does not survive into law. But there is one good thing, and that is it will, I believe, allow the – assuming that the budget resolutions pass, and they've yet to do that, but assuming they do with the OCO fix, it will allow the committees to mark up at the president's budget level, so the defense committee, so they can focus on getting that right in hopes that downstream in the fall that we get a budget deal and then things proceed mm-hmm. in a more regular manner.
I think it's also fair to remember that since this is Congress, they can figure out a way to do whatever it is that they want to do at some point in time. So if what you're suggesting could happen is the case, and they mark to what the president's requested and what the total, including OCO, is, that then if there's a deal as we get closer to September 30, they can revisit it and rewrite everything. That wouldn't be unprecedented historically either, would it?
And really not that hard either. Once they've made the decisions, going back to a more regular way wouldn't be that difficult.
So as always, it comes down to the decision-making process, as we see all the time with these two bodies. Bob Hale, Booz Allen's my guest. You have said that this is a bad idea. And you're very clear about that. How different is what they're proposing this year, though, from what we've seen historically? I mean, this isn't the first time that this has happened where they stick a bunch of stuff in the OCO budget and give it to you and say, deal with it.
You're right. Both DOD, while I was the comptroller, did some of it. Congress certainly did some of it. I would say, though, that what was done before has been done in the past are gray area adds. And by that, I mean there was some relationship to added wartime funding. I'll give you an example. OCO right now has funding for some Navy ships, but there are at least ships, carrier strike groups in the Gulf participating in operations there, so there's some relationship. This ad is different in the sense that the dollars involved have no relationship to the war. I don't think anybody questions or it's just a way of getting defense to a higher number mm-hmm. without having to raise the cap.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I have not seen anybody dodge that.
No.
Accusations.
I give them credit for that. They've been candid about what they're doing, and I think Senator McCain said it's a gimmick, and then later he said, well, it's the best we got, or something like that.
Yeah, my takeaway seemed to be that it's a gimmick, but it's our gimmick, and so, you know.
Or it's a gimmick that works.
That's right. That's exactly right. Are there any benefits that you see, anything in these resolutions that we can take away as a positive for the Defense Department, Bob?
Well, I believe the Department of Defense needs added funding and above the cap level. And so, as I just said, this will allow the committees to mark up so they won't be forced to spend all the time to take $35 billion out of the defense budget. They'll mark up at the level that I hope is closer to the one ends up. So I think that is a good sign.
Mm-hmm.
But I also hope that the OCO fix does not become law.
So the good news is the top line number administration and both chambers seem to agree on. I guess that's if we're looking for a silver lining.
That is a good point. I mean, there's pretty strong support, certainly on the Republican side, and I think some on the Democratic side too, for higher levels for defense and. Probably some support, at least, I don't know how widespread, for some increases in non-defense. I mean, State Department, Homeland Security, these are closely tied to national security, and there are some other important things in the government as well. So I think there is some good news that Congress seems a little more willing to reconsider some additions to the budget caps and the so-called discretionary spending, defense and non-defense.
If there is then that silver lining, there also will be some battles to pay attention to. Neither the Defense Department nor Congress appears to back down in what it sees as the future of the A-10. And there's a laundry list of them. And I don't mean to take you specifically to the A-10, but it's just an example of the fact that while, yes, we have the top line agreement, and that's not a bad thing, that's something that we should mark in the good column, that there still is a process here that has potential to get a little ugly as time goes on.
Well, of course, I don't know that we yet have. I mean, we've been talking positively, and I'd like to stay positive, but I'm not sure we have agreement on the top line yet. I mean, I would not rule out the OCO fix. This is a plan, as I said at the beginning. Mm-hmm. We have to get to laws. That means they'd have to get 60 votes in the Senate and the president's signature. I don't know we're at that point yet. I think it's still possible, unfortunately, that the process breaks down and Congress ends up appropriating at the cap level, and defense and other agencies don't get the added funding. But you're right. We'll now start the more normal process in defense of, I expect probably the House Armed Services Committee will lead the way with a markup of the authorization bill maybe late this month, early next, and we'll see the House appropriators and the Senate will be following suit, working all those hard issues from the A-10 BRAC to compensation, low-end compensation, all the tough issues, some of which have been addressed before, some not. So there's a long way to go in the process, and I suspect most of that will get most of the way there before we see fall negotiations on some kind of budget deal.
I don't expect certainly to presume to have you speak for your successor, Mr. McCord, but let's say you were in your former job at the Defense Department, and somehow this OCO fix becomes the reality that you have to deal with. How does the department go about executing that and making that work as it would have to do in that situation?
Well, as I said, I think it's a bad idea. But if it were to become law, then I think they could execute it. The appropriators and the authorizers, particularly appropriators, would have to be careful to get the money that was supposed to be in the base, and is now in OCO, in the right categories. But assuming they do that, and it's and they certainly could. I believe it is executable. More than you probably want to know, and will clearly mark me as a former comptroller, but when these accounts actually go into execution, they merge. They budget separately for OCO and the base, but they become one pot. Say it's all operation and maintenance money in budget activity one. And so as long as they're in the right budget activity in O&M or the right program, they could execute it. Mm-hmm. Nonetheless, for all the reasons we've talked about, precedent, one-year fix, I hope they don't have to.
But logistically, it doesn't present a tremendous challenge.
I think they could. I mean, I'm not there, so I'll defer to the department if it objects, but I believe they probably could make it work if they had to.
What happens next? Where do you see this headed just based on your experience in working this beyond fiscal 16? I know a lot of it's dependent on what we would see come out of a possible deal, as we've discussed in the first part of our conversation, Bob. But it strikes me that, again, whatever resolution we come to for this fiscal year, it's just for this fiscal year. And I think we're now, 7 years into the Budget Control Act, so or 3 years, excuse me, so we're still looking at
2011, so we're up to four.
Okay,
now.
So I time flies when you're having fun. So there's still six more years of this sequestration potentially hanging over our heads.
Well, first off, I very much hope that we get a two-year budget deal, as we did in the bipartisan budget agreement. Take us through the presidential elections, because we have to do this again next year. Mm-hmm. It certainly won't be any prettier. It could be even uglier. I hope that happens. Beyond that, I mean, we badly need a broad budget deal in this country that goes beyond discretionary spending, that is the money Congress appropriates each year, defense and non-defense, and deals with entitlements and, I think, to be realistic, with revenues as well. That I don't believe will happen in this administration, but I hope it is a priority for the next president, whoever that is, to try to reach a broad deal. And as part of that, to at least partially or fully lift the budget caps, the so-called sequestration level caps. So we'll have to see. But for now, I think the goal should be to get through 16 and 17 with reasonable levels for defense and non-defense.
Am I correct in separating the concept of sequestration as a budgeting mechanism and the numbers that are tied to the Budget Control Act? I do that in my head, and I see a lot of coverage that seems to tie the two of them together. Sometimes I wonder if I'm not approaching it right, because it strikes me that they're two separate issues.
You are correct. I mean, the only thing that constitutes formal sequestration is if the Congress appropriates at a level above the caps, say at the president's level in 16, but doesn't change the cap. Then you get a formal order from OMB, and then you get the salami slice cuts. That, I think, is very unlikely to happen this year. There's no stomach for that on the Hill. The worst that's going to happen, and it wouldn't be good, but the worst is that they appropriate at the cap level. So I always try to say cap level and leave sequestration for that, which is only the only thing it really is those salami slice cuts in an OMB order.
Mm-hmm.
But many use the terms interchangeably, even though technically that's not correct.
And I think the value in pointing that out is that since they are two separate and distinct things, they require two separate and distinct methods of analysis to understand the impact they could potentially have on any agency, but especially in the case of this discussion, the Department of Defense.
I think that's a fair statement. If you get formal sequestration, there are all the rules that prevailed in 2013. It has to be equal in percentage terms at 2,500 program projects and activities. It is very much a salami slice mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
I might add, although I think it is only is not going to be an issue, but even in what I believe is very unlikely case that we got a formal sequestration, the Department of Defense, at least, and I think all the agencies are in a very different situation than they were in 2013. They are operating at the cap levels, actually. They're a little bit in 15, a little bit below the 16 cap level. So I don't think there would be the jam on the physical brakes situation that occurred in 2013. I don't think, for example, you'd see furloughs again or any of the training stand downs. It's not a good thing because I think defense needs some added money, but it'll be a very different situation than 2013.
We've already seen the commissioner of the IRS, John Koskinen, say that he's not expecting to do any furloughs, even though their budget's down 10% or more since fiscal 2010. So one would think that if an agency pinched to that degree is going to be fine without furloughs, one would hope the other agencies will be able to do the same thing. But that speaks to the broader issue of the workforce. And you pointed out some items in this in these resolutions to me pertaining to the workforce that it sounds like you find troubling, Bob. What are those?
Well, first, let me remind all the listeners one more time.
Yes.
These are not laws. This is a plan, and it's really one party's plan so far. But it, on the House side in particular, does call for some changes in federal civil service retirement, added contributions. There's not a lot of detail, although I think they provide a little more to the press, and some possible other changes. In the Senate, they take some savings, but they're even less clear about the details. So I am concerned in general for the civil service workforce. I mean, we've had three of the past 5 years, we've seen pay freezes, we've seen two furloughs, several cases where for new entrants, at least, we've raised the retirement contribution, now a discussion of it again. I hope Congress will reach an agreement with the president on what should be done with regard to civil service compensation and then stop this every year readdressing it. And I believe, and I'm probably guilty here, that we need to do a better job than we have done of saying thank you to our civil servants, who do a very good job of that on the military side and DOD. We don't do as well in the government as a whole on the civilian side, but they've done a lot. They've been through a lot. They've kept the government going, minimized harm. Certainly the financial community dealt with some of the greatest chaos I've seen in 40 years of working in the defense budget. And so I think we owe them a great deal. And let me take this opportunity, if any of them are listening, to say thank you.
We've seen a number of bills in addition to the budget resolution, too, that would pick at various aspects of the compensation package for civilian federal employees. The most noteworthy one is Congressman Tom Rice's bill that would peel 8.7%, I think, right off the top of anybody making over $100,000 or more. And I have a conversation with him about that at federalnewsradio.com.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the silver lining there, which I, if there's a theme, I guess it's that I'm always looking for that in these dark clouds, Bob. That seems to be that there are a number of these bills that regard the federal workforce that seem to be designed more for the constituents back home of the individual members rather than any concerted effort to impact positively or negatively the federal workforce. I guess that's a good thing.
Well, I mean, I think you're right in general in saying you shouldn't look at a bill or certainly these resolutions, just assume they're going to become law. But we have seen several laws in the past couple of years that have raised the retirement contribution. Again, it has been for, in the federal civil service, it has been for new entrants. So I don't think I could sit here and say with confidence that we won't see that debate continuing. I just wish we'd do it once or twice at the most, make up our mind and stop doing it every year, because I think it is hard on morale, and we see that slipping in the federal civilian workforce.
I want to change gears in the time that we have left, if we can, Bob. We learned through a report my colleague Jared Serbu has on federalnewsradio.com about the withdrawal of the opinion on the Marine Corps budget, and I wonder, from your view, again, sitting in your former seat as the comptroller, what does that mean when the IG withdraws that opinion? What does it mean technically? Mm-hmm. What's the actual literal meaning of it? And then conceptually, what's the meaning as it impacts the ability of the Defense Department to hit the 2017 audit deadline?
Well, first, I don't want to speak for the department here, so I'll leave that to them. But so I'll give you my personal opinions. I mean, technically, it means that the audit opinion says you can rely on, to a material degree, on the numbers in there. What the IG has said is you can't any longer rely. I'm frustrated by this. The audit of that statement, which is the fiscal 12 Marine Corps budget, I might add, went on for a year and a half. And then a year and a half later, they discovered some additional information during subsequent audits that caused them, I guess, to change their mind. I hope it's a temporary setback, and that I hope the IG will also take the time to clear up the issue and either decide they can't support the opinion they issued a year and a half ago or reinstate it. But more generally, I mean, the audit's going ahead. We have all four services now, or DOD does, and the audit and what's called the Statement of Budgetary Activity, their first year of their budget. I wouldn't expect positive opinions this time. It always takes more than a year. But being under audit is very important because they'll learn so much more. They'll fix the problems that are most important. So I'm still hopeful that they can move forward. And the department's also got to look at what it does with the other statements to meet the 2017 deadline or come as close as they can.
The most important thing a defense official told me, a gentleman that you worked with formerly, was it's as important that the agency is in the game and is pushing down the field, to use a football analogy, as it is that they actually score a touchdown, especially given the amount of time that it's been since Congress originally pushed you in this direction.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, at some point, they need to score that touchdown.
Right.
But I think there remains a strong consensus in the department. At least I sense that, and certainly among many members of Congress. So I'm cautiously optimistic. I am optimistic that they will move forward and they'll find a way to do it. And they may not get everything done on every deadline, but they'll make substantial progress.